Mia Chiocchiranta here. Paul Kelly's How to Make Gravy was written 25 years ago. It's grown to become a Christmas anthem. The song's written as a letter from jail. The fictional character Joe mentions a cast of relatable family members as he laments a lost Christmas. Today on Earshot, the ABC's Mike Williams uses the song as a starting point to speak to previously incarcerated people about their experience in prison on Christmas Day. And a warning, this program makes reference to suicide and abuse.
It's a big day today. It's the 21st of December, which means that it is Gravy Day.
You never know what's going to happen to the songs after you write them. It doesn't have a chorus. It's set in prison. So I never thought it would be like a hit song or anything. But it sort of got more popular over time. I think people started playing it on Christmas. People started calling it Gravy Day over the last few years. So it's just one of those things.
Hello, Dan. It's Joe here. I hope you're keeping well. It's the 21st of December. Now they're ringing the last bell.
It's always a fun song to play because it seems to have this inbuilt gear change in it. So even when you're, on nights when you're sort of struggling a bit singing, I start to play that song and it starts to play me.
Won't you kiss my kids on Christmas Day? Please don't let them cry for me.
I was asked to take part in a charity Christmas album, you know, where different artists sing songs and carols. Lindsay Field, who plays guitar and sings with John Farnham, been organising these records for years. They're called Spirit of Christmas. And I picked a song, but it was already taken. So he said, why don't you try and write a Christmas song yourself? So I said, okay. And then got stuck, you know, didn't really know how to start it. There's been a lot of Christmas songs written. And I started thinking, well, how would you write about the feeling of Christmas? Maybe I write it from the point of view of someone who's missing Christmas, who can't get to Christmas. And I thought, well, why can't they get there? Maybe they're overseas and they can't get home. Or then I thought, oh, he's in prison. He can't get to Christmas because he's in prison. The song wrote itself from there.
My name is Eleni and I spent one Christmas in jail. I come from a big fat Greek family, like my big fat Greek wedding. So Christmas was always pretty big, even just with my immediate family, and lots of laughter and always getting together at somebody's place, going to church. We always went to church as a family growing up.
What did you eat?
Everything from seafood to mum's Greek lamb to, yeah, everything.
Did you eat so much that people had to lie on the floor after lunch?
Yes, the food coma definitely happened. And it was out in the backyard, usually at mum's on the grass. I was incarcerated the 1st of September, so I had a few months in the run-up to Christmas, and you didn't want to think about it because you knew you'd be away from your family at that time, you know, once your sentence is handed down and you know how long you're going to be in there for. So there's a constant ache knowing that that day is coming and you won't be there, not only for what you feel yourself, but what your family and your children will be feeling, the hardship that you've put them through. We were told the day before that we would only have an hour and a half out of our houses, and that means we were locked in. In that hour and a half, you really wanted to get to the phone to ring your family because we could only ring out and it was a 6-minute timed call. And you can imagine the queues at the phones on Christmas Day with 200 odd women in that prison wanting to phone home. I was worried that I wasn't going to get my 6-minute call in. I wanted to make that call, but I knew it would be a hard call on Christmas Day to have. But I tried to keep myself upbeat in my tone of voice, despite feeling the ache of not being there. every weekend when we had visits, that's what I looked forward to. And knowing I had the support of family and friends added to more healthy thought patterns because I had those visits, which can only add to rehabilitation. But when you're denied that, especially on a day like Christmas, yeah, you've got to wonder what is the real reason for the way they do things in prison. A lot of women did pack the chapel out on Christmas Day, regardless of, you know, what they believed. And we were all in there at this Christmas service wearing the same colour, green, not necessarily the jewels that you might have had out in the community. And that really highlighted to me that the women focused on what Christmas Day was really about. It brought us together. Yeah, it was powerful. So I pulled this out. This is something I've never done scrapbooking before, but to pass time in the 11 months, I made a scrapbook. It was funny, the church that I went to before for 21 years shunned me. So the people that continued to support me were really special to me. So getting these cards was part of my rehabilitation. And then what my son, he made up a poem and wrote it for me for Christmas Day. And it just was pretty special reading what he wrote. He says, "Dear Mum, sent to the world, born was a king, there laid a child the world would trust in. A life laid before him, a life not his own, to live for the Father and to please him alone. Innocent was he born, innocent did he die, to carry the cross of man's sin, God's gift to you and I. Now I hold on to this king and he's holding you, only to find he's holding me too. He's holding our failures, he's holding us strong. With holes in his hands, his strength carries our wrongs. So I look to my mum to judge not one spot, but to worship a king who covers the lot. Now there's no road too long, no fence too high, no matter the mistake or great the divide. Nothing can stop this message to you. Merry Christmas, Mum. I'll always love you." That was tough. That was tough to read. And 7 years later, it's still tough to read because I needed to hear that from my kids who continued to support me. And it was just a real comfort.
My name's Damien Lenane, and I only spent the one Christmas in prison, but that was enough. Yeah. I had a very interesting childhood. There was a very prolonged custody battle between my parents. My father got custody of me by fabricating stories that my mother had abused me, which she didn't. When I was 13, I left my father's care. I was sick of him assaulting me, and I went and lived with my mother. But by that stage, she wasn't very well mentally and was very far below the poverty line. So there weren't a lot of great Christmas stories in my childhood. I was, really looking forward to what we were planning in Christmas, because ironically, for the first time in a long time, I was in what I considered to be a relatively speaking stable living situation. I was got along really well with the other people in my wing, and there was no drama. And for the first time in my life, I thought it was going to be a relaxed and just a pleasant experience for a change. One person ordered a whole chicken, and another person ordered steaks, and then we had a pretty good selection of vegetables and things you could order. So between all of us, we had what was going to be I assume they still had a pretty good spread, but unfortunately I wasn't there for it when it actually happened. one person in particular, they're particularly unwell. I had had a lot of unwanted contact with that person for many years. It had been a really significant source of stress in my life. And I actually contacted that person and I said, wait for me to contact you because I need a break from how toxic our relationship has been. I was in a real state of depression because I realized that even in prison, I couldn't protect myself from this toxic family member who wouldn't respect my wishes and leave me alone. And I was just like, how is this going to end? Like, I have no control over my life. I have no control over who can contact me. And as it turns out, the response to the prison thinking you're suicidal is they put you in isolation. What that entails is they put you in solitary confinement. So they deprive you of sunlight, contact with other people, ability to exercise, the ability to call your family. And that's what happened to me. That was 2 days before Christmas. And then it was actually on Christmas Day, I got put in the transport truck and moved to that high security establishment. I got to that new prison and they put me in a new cell. I was sitting in there and I felt like, ironically, an outcast, you know, in the prison because I didn't know anyone there. And yeah, it's definitely the most alone I've ever felt on Christmas. They gave me a cupcake that had, it was like a fruit cupcake with pink ice cream and like one of those preservative type cherries on top, and it said Merry Christmas in like faded black ink on the plastic packet, and that was the only thing that was different. And normally I didn't eat those kind of things, but I remember it was like I was depressed and it was Christmas and that was the only thing I'd been given. And I remember I opened it up and it was sickly sweet. I can still remember it. It left a very bitter taste in my mouth. Yeah, this was supposed to be the best Christmas of my life and it's just been completely upended, and it was definitely the lowest point of my experience in prison. That's the last bad Christmas I had. I got out of prison the following September and I moved to Newcastle where I still am now, and I've got a really good support network of friends here. And so I like to think about how far I've come, and so Christmas is a good time of the year now, and it definitely makes me happy to know that that's all behind me.
My name is John Killick. I've spent about 30 Christmases over the years, from about 1960 to now, in prison. Well known because in March 1999 I escaped in a helicopter from Saltwood in prison, hijacked by my lover at the time, Lucy Dudka. So I've got quite a history of bank robbery, but all that was last century. I went in at 17, I was underage at Long Bay Jail, and you've got to understand the conditions, what they were like in those days, that very lucky to get a hold of a paperback book. You had no running water, you had a jug of water, and you had no sewage system, which meant you had a bucket in the corner and you were three and so on. Can you imagine what it was like at Christmas and over the January period, which is very hot, and you could write one letter a week. And the prison officer would read it first, and if he didn't like it, felt it wasn't suitable, he'd rip it up and tell you to go and write another one. Christmas is just another day in jail to most people in there. It's not a special day. There's nothing special about it except that the screws go home early to their families and while you're locked in. And with cells being overcrowded, you're going to be locked in with someone. He's probably going to be stressed. It was just horrible. I was in with two Dutch boys that couldn't talk much English, and they were really feeling it too because their family was over there in Holland, you know. I remember the story they told me that Santa Claus originated from there, St. Nicholas. I said, how do you work that out? And he said, no, the kids used to go around saying, San Nicholas, San Nicholas, and it sounds like Santa Claus. Yeah, that's where they got the name, Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, yeah. Guys in jail traditionally try to make Christmas brews, celebrated by having a drink. Of course, the prison officers always run around trying to find them. And they can be very innovative when it comes to something like this. In the old days, they made it, particularly with oranges, had a bit to do and other stuff, but we've never seen an orange in the system since the late 80s. But they still find other ways to do it, and when Ron Woodham was around, he was head of the squad they called the Home Brew Squad. I remember one they didn't find because they hid it in the prison officer's in his office. You know, and they had an excuse to go in and out again and clean, and they'd put it in the garbage and cover it over and put a bag over it. And they actually had this home brew going in there for about 2 weeks in the offices, and they never found it. And they all got drunk and they'd come out later that they home brewed this stuff in the prison officer's office. Well, he denied it, of course, but it did happen. But if they gave them a better Christmas, they wouldn't need to do these things.
Get me back, I don't care what happens to me. Get me back to my wife and kids. Help me, Clarence, please. Please, I want to live again.
If you want to watch James Stewart in that movie, they play every year, you know. If you've done 30 years in jail, you've got to watch it 30 times. I mean, you know, they play the same old stuff on television, so you're not going to sit there and watch television. What are you going to do? The meals are terrible. There's nothing spared. They don't do anything to make Christmas special in jail. You cut off from your family. To me, it's a depressing time, and people will say, well, don't go to jail, and that's a good tip, you know, that's a good tip. But wait till your son goes to jail and is ringing you up and joining it, and you've got to, because we all meet somebody or have somebody close to us at some stage in our lives that has to go to jail, you know, for some reason or another. And believe me, it's not a pleasant place.
So my name's Kat Armstrong, and I spent 10 Christmases in prison. Each one was very different to the other, although the thing that was the same was the highlight of how much you miss family, friends, and loved ones.
How did it change over time?
You become harder, and you become more immune to allowing yourself to feel vulnerable. That first Christmas was the worst out of the 10 because it was the first and something I'd never experienced before, but more so because I had a one-year-old child that for her first Christmas I was not there for. And of course, she was only a baby, but for me, I had so much regret, so much remorse, so much guilt because I wasn't the mother that she, I believe, deserved to have. I had to rely on what became my family, which were the other women that I was sharing that experience with and who I grew to depend on and rely upon for love and that sense of community. More negative than positive things happen in prison on Christmas Day and around the approach of Christmas, because of what it does represent to so many people.
In all the Christmases you've had since, how many of those would you think back to Christmas in prison?
Everyone. Every Christmas. Usually I'll Facebook my many sisters that I've been inside with who are now out, but usually I'll do a general post that asks everyone to please remember everyone that's in prison today on this Christmas Day. So as far as forgetting, or it's easier, that'll never happen. Never.
Why is that? You know, it's been a long time.
Because it was so difficult, Christmas Day in prison. And when I think of all the children of prisoners, you know, having to untie somebody trying to hang themselves on a Christmas Day because it's too hard. When you've experienced things like that, they never leave. And honestly, there's so much more than just paying your debt to society. I would say I survived. I survived each and every Christmas Day that I spent in prison without self-harm. And thankfully, with the love of my sisters beside me, knowing that one day I would get out and get to share a Christmas again.
Also, I'm Jamie. I was in jail for only one Christmas.
What do you think about Paul Kelly's song, How to Make Gravy?
I don't know if I know the song. I'm not good with artists and songs. I know when I hear the song.
Let me play a bit.
Yeah, if you got it on.
Let me play a bit and then you can, might jog your memory, I can just hear it.
Is he an Aussie dude?
Yeah, Paul Kelly.
I don't even know who he is.
Paul Kelly, mate. You're going to educate yourself.
I'm shocking about like artists and stuff like that.
Hello, Dan. It's Joe here.
It's Christmas Day in jail. What are you thinking about?
You don't get no Christmas presents in there. Santa doesn't come in jail. It was a long day thinking of just what you normally do. Like, we always had games of cricket. It was a big family day.
What did your family do on that day without you?
Nothing. Mum, she was just doing it really hard, so she just cancelled the whole day. I feel for the parents of the people that are in jail a lot, because I reckon they do it a lot harder than what the people in jail do. My parents always booked in every single weekend for a visit. Without doubt, so you get an hour visit. They'd always come on a Saturday. They come for a visit one time, and then at the gates they said, oh no, we've been told you're trying to bring contraband in just by intel. My parents were like, no. My stepdad's quite aggressive, so he come off quite bad to the guards, so he got pretty upset about it. And then they put a ban on my parents coming in to visit me in New South Wales jails. Mum tried taking it to the governor, done all sorts of things. They moved me 13 hours away. That was probably like one of the hardest times, was like, walk away from mum and just crying. It was the hardest thing I've ever went through my entire life, seeing your mum cry. It's not good. Put in segregation. I was in Sego for 28 days. I thought my whole life over again. Like, I just thought of every single moment that I've ever been through. Like, that was just before Christmas. That was the last visit I got to see my parents on. From there, went to Bathurst and Wellington. And then Wellington was a pretty rough place to be in jail. Like, it was real hot. You have a shower, you can't even dry yourself at night because you sit there, just sweat back out, sort of back out. You sleep in a wet bed every night. It wasn't pleasant.
First today, fire crews are dealing with extreme conditions in several states again today. Authorities say those who haven't left East Gippsland by now may be stranded in the area if the bushfires...
So when the 2019 bushfires were going on, I just kept seeing the news, and then during that time I was having very slim contact with my family. If I was calling a friend, they'd have to do a freeway call to my mum to be able to talk to her. Like, oh yeah, it's getting closer, rah rah. Then I see the fires mentioned in my suburb where I lived. I got to speak to mum like 2 days later. I was like, you guys got evacuated. The fires are crazy. And then the phone call got cut. It's the last time I got to speak to him. And mum was adamant she wasn't leaving. So I was just stressed about my family because I know how stubborn my mum is. She would have stayed and burnt in the house before she let the house go. I had no one to tell me that my family's all good. Watching it in jail on the news, everything's a lot worse when you're in there, because I couldn't see what was going on, didn't know what was going on, didn't know how bad it was, didn't know how close it was to home. Me brothers, me dog, I was stressing about my dog probably the most out of anything, because I love my little girl. So that was probably the worst part, just not knowing what was happening. It's got a mad beat to it, isn't it? Yeah, it's good.
That won't stop the roast?
Yeah, yeah, that's gold. Wish Mum didn't stop the roast, but I think the flies stopped the roast as well. It wouldn't taste the same without me cooking it. Dad will overcook it for sure. I was like how I felt with like my brothers and stuff, just thinking about my brothers. And my brother looks at me and looks up to me really a lot. Like, he did it hard as well, but how he says I'm sorry, I think every single time I spoke to my parents on the phone, I just told him I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry, like, all you sort of can do.
So he's thinking about them when he's standing in line.
Yeah, yeah. Not a moment that your family's not in the back of your mind. Like, you don't miss your family when you're out of jail, but you miss them when you're in there. You miss them a lot.
What do you think about Christmas now?
Makes me push for them more and not complain about cutting the meat up. I butcher my trades, so I always get all the big hams, get all the big turkey, have a massive feed.
Did you ever make the gravy?
All the time.
Really?
Yeah, we did catering too for the butcher shop. It's all part of it.
What's your gravy recipe?
On the Gravox powder and then the oil from the meat when I cook it. So it's all the fat and residue. I just mix it with all the juices from the meat once it's cooked. I guess I'll be cooking this Christmas again. I did it last Christmas and hopefully I can do it for the rest of the Christmases.
You'll be the gravy man?
Yep, I'll be the gravy man for sure. Yeah, bloody oaf will be. Who's gonna make the gravy now? Just add flour, salt, a little red wine. Don't forget a dollop of tomato sauce for sweetness and an extra tang. And give me love to Angus and the Franken dollar. Tell them all I'm sorry. I screwed up this time. And look out the reader. I'll be thinking of her early Christmas morning.
Who's Gonna Make the Gravy was produced by Mike Williams. The sound engineer was Russell Stapleton. How to Make Gravy was written and performed by Paul Kelly. Additional music by Mike. I'm Miyuki Okiranta, and that wraps another year of Earshot. So tune in next week when we kick off our summer series. I'll catch you then.